extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Bow from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. It's the A-Team. Kalen Carr is here. David Goss is here. Matt Doyle is here. You're part of the A-Team, Kalen.
I was looking at you for a second. I was like, "Who is this? You say this to everybody?" Yeah. You say this to everybody.
No, no. You put out the, you know, the manager puts out the lineup, Kalen, puts it on the board. This is my first choice. Number
one.
He
doesn't say that to everyone because you listen to every show.
That's true.
You're not here, and you've never heard it.
I actually do. But do you always dress like this?
Me? No, this is my Leagues Cup formal.
Is it formal? Is it? It's like more Leagues Cup casual.
It's like, remember when all those teams would be like, "We're wearing black because it's a funeral when they go to a playoff game or whatever." This is my Leagues Cup formal.
I respect the competition.
Yeah,
respect the level of what we're doing, and so I wore my jacket on top of my Leagues Cup ball purse.
A Bear Bryant on top.
I thought
of
it was an Inter Miami shirt at first.
No.
Oh, impartiality here.
Yeah, I would never cheer for a team. I'm Leagues Cup first.
Gotcha.
As long as Leagues Cup wins.
Wait, how did you get a ball boy's shirt? I'm confused.
First of all, ball person. Come on, Kalen.
If you can't look, this is a podcast as well. We have to acknowledge that. It is a hot pink.
Well, if you
Leagues
can't see.
Cup.
Wait, did I tell you about
shirt.
Seattle, by the way?
No.
I went to visit Seattle this weekend for a short time to see a friend. We were at a brewery Friday, like noon. Come on, obviously. But specific time doesn't count. And I go and order a drink, and this guy just goes, "Do you do podcasts?" And I was like, I kind of sound like the type of thing where someone's like, "Oh, you have a good sound to your voice."
Oh, yeah. You're hoping for that. You're like, "Oh, you recognize my voice."
No, I didn't think that. And I was like, yeah. I do like hosting and stuff. He goes, "No, yeah, like Extra Time." And then he said, "I've never watched it. And you don't look like what I thought you look like."
Oh.
So one, shout out Noah. Because you made me look cool. And so I appreciate that. Second of all, I don't know what that means. Feels like it's probably not a good thing. The odds of it being a good thing
are low. You're strikingly fill in the blank compared to what I imagined based on this.
But I get
podcast.
It. So if you're not watching, but you should, I'm wearing a pink Leagues Cup ball person t-shirt and a blazer overneath, a little bit of a college professor look.
It's a houndstooth blazer, yeah.
Yeah.
It's something. It's something. Anyway, Leagues Cup semifinals are over. We're on to the finals. Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, Inter Miami going to the Music City, Nashville. You can watch, of course, MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. The Lionel Messi show just continues. Another goal, a 4-1 win in Chester. Union lay down. We will dig into that, of course. And Nashville's bringing one of the upsets all time against Liga MX in the MLS Liga MX matchup. Monterrey, I don't think anybody's knocked them out in a knockout round.
This is the first time an MLS team has eliminated Monterrey from any competition. I'm not sure I'm willing to call it an all-time upset.
It's fine. We'll debate.
It's a huge win. It's the biggest win in Nashville's history, for sure.
First final for both teams. We'll go through those semifinal games, preview the final.
You know, Kalen's
MLS
friend,
is back.
When we watched the game, we thought they were Monterey, California.
That is true.
You have to tell the story.
Do you think San Luis Obispo has a shot at Leagues Cup this year?
Yeah, no, I was watching the game. I mean, it goes with, like, a lot of my friends are not always dialed into. I hope they're listening, but chances are they're not. But a lot of them are watching all the Messi matches, right? It was the same group that I was watching the World Cup with in Qatar.
And wait.
Not in Qatar.
Do you like them better or do you like us better?
I mean, it's very different crowds, I would say. Yeah. But I would say this is the A team.
This is the A team.
This is the A team.
Domino.
Yeah. So my buddy Kush was like, "Hey," he thought I was like, "Oh, well, Monterrey, this is exciting. It'd be cool if they advance because then you keep the Liga MX against MLS thing." And then he was like, "Wait, this isn't MLS?" And I was like, "No, this is Leagues Cup. We play against, you know, two different leagues and all this."
Plural.
Yeah.
Leagues, like two leagues.
It's a World Cup style tournament.
Yeah.
Just to, you know.
Well, he also bet money on Inter Miami winning MLS Cup. And so he texted me early in the
tournament.
He's
only one game away.
He thought Monterrey, after we watched the Miami game, and then afterwards we kept it rolling. And he was like, oh, I thought that was the California team. And I was like, nah,
no. Almost.
Different budget.
Extra R, I think, is the way it goes on that. Yeah, the spelling. Yeah. Single R for Monterey. And then Monterey is the double R.
Shout out to Frank Yallop and
there you go.
Monterey Bay.
Rafael Baca.
Yeah. Working with different budgets, I think, than Realdo.
Eric, who goes by Rick in Utah, asked this question, Doyle. Is this the best MLS has ever been? Can it get any better? Where do we go from here? It feels like a massive inflection point for the league. It's the best League's Cup has ever been.
Yeah. He asked, this is like a Weeby style tweet because he asked three straight questions.
Firing it at you.
And then made a statement. is this the best MLS has ever been? No, I think 2018 was the best year in MLS history. Like that year was absolutely insane. And up until League's Cup, I don't think this year had felt like a weird up and down, strange vibe to it. I think coming off the Winter World Cup, we saw a lot of teams or a lot of players didn't have their legs. And then also a lot of teams that we expect to make big moves and play good soccer have not done that. Big teams like Atlanta, Toronto, the Galaxy. I mean, the Galaxy have been a meme all year, but remember, they made it to the Western Conference. Was it the finals or
semis?
Semis, and they really pushed LAFC.
Chicharito already told us if they'd won that game, they would have won.
They knocked out my Nashville pick.
Yeah. Right.
Chicago, well, Chicago's always in that group, but like it feels like it's been a really weird year because of that. And where we go from here, I think everybody looks at what Miami has done now by going out and targeting, two incredibly high level players. And the teams that I just talked about, Toronto, Chicago, Atlanta, the Galaxy, and to a lesser extent, Seattle, who I think are headed towards a rebuild. I think they're going to try to do something similar. So I expect 2024 to be absolutely incredible. But 2023 has been weird. It really has been. And League's Cup has been the high point of it so far by a mile. But we're actually kind of set up now because both conferences are so compacted. 12-game sprint to the finish should be awesome.
One thing I really like about that is different. I remember in years past always trying to explain the last 10, 11 games is in a locker room is generally when you start to realize like, okay, now we need to make our push. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about my Dynamo teams.
Yeah, it was a Dom Kinnear special.
Yeah, but if you look at Bruce Arena's...
That's when they opened up and played the beautiful song.
If you looked at Bruce Arena's Galaxy teams, a lot of teams, especially the experienced ones, would then know how to... Yeah, Sounders, exactly. Would know how to kind of flip that switch and push. But it was always hard to kind of communicate, whether to fans or... just to people in general about what that's like or exactly when that point comes because the season was just so long and it'd be difficult at times, especially in those summer months. And so I really like that, moving on from League's Cup, it's like clear. It's a sprint, 10, 11 games, going straight all the way to try to like click in. And you're coming in from that knockout form. So I look at teams that did well in the tournament, even teams you weren't quite expecting. Nashville, they've turned their season around. Let's see.
Charlotte would be one, I think.
Charlotte, yeah, they were in a tough spot.
Even Nico Estevez came out and said the Miami game was the best intensity level Dallas has played.
Yep.
And I think he said, if we play that way, we'll be fine.
Yeah, well, Minnesota
maybe
United
start using
deeper.
Alan Velasco as a 10 instead of a winger or a free 8.
Okay, why don't you text Nico Estevez that response?
He doesn't respond to me.
Okay.
To get to the last point of Rick or Eric, his tweet is feels like a massive inflection point for the league. I think it is. I think it is in part because, Messi is Messi and what he means for eyeballs from your friends who think San Luis Obispo was, playing in the
Atletico San Luis. You could kind of move it all around.
That could have been a sell there.
Yeah.
But also every MLS team has major resources. And we're talking five or six who go out and have the ability to spend at a high level and play at the high stakes table at the, global game of poker. Like, they're all going to be out there doing that this January. At the same time, more and more young talent coming through every MLS academy at this point. We see it with Miami. It's not as big a story as Messi, but the way Kramaski has suddenly started, you know, instantly fitting in. There's
Noah Allen.
Noah Allen was excellent before Jordi Alba came and took his spot. You know, Ruiz.
But like, they don't beat Cruz Azul if Noah Allen's not
part
of the team, right? Like, it's all helped them. And I think it goes maybe to a point with the inflection point thing of, like, when Beckham and Cuadamac came in, it was great. But you've talked about, like, the depth being there or the quality stage being there to build on.
Yeah.
And I think Messi coming in right now, it feels like it's a cohesive roster of and a team that has pieces that you – and it's not just, like – can he? I know the conversation. I actually thought Taylor was a little bit off on this last night in talking about how much Messi has changed everything. I mean, they left half their roster empty in a salary cap league. They basically had two DP spots open, and they left money out there so they could make these signings. No team can overcome that. But those pieces all exist. Of built through the academy, done well through the draft, had a second team where you've been able to put guys on over the last 3 years that have developed players to be available for them, and then gone out and signed other quality players.
And then on top of
it, 22 now.
Jim Curtin said last night in his post-game press conference, he thinks that there are rule changes coming. Now, we haven't heard anything specific about that. There's been a lot of reporting from folks at The Athletic, primarily, including Extra Time B-teamer, Tom Boger.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
super, I prefer to call him a super sub. You know, like, it's important to have clearly defined roles.
Yeah. So I think there's a really good bet that MLS is going to look different and better next year. And I think the blueprint that it's inimitable, right? You can't go out and sign another Lionel Messi. There's only one. But the idea of going out and saying, okay, we could get Nico, you know, this generation's version of Nico Ladero and 3-4 other high level players and push our academy kids through and get U22 signings who are already full internationals or, you know, the most expensive center back in league history. Like, it feels like that's all on the table for 2024. So I'm not looking past, because like we said, this is Dom Kinnear's time of year, man. Like the end run
since
to the
he's
playoffs.
In the zone, baby.
But like, so I always enjoy this time of year the most, but like, I think 2024 is going to be incredible in this league.
In the meantime, for the last 12, 10 games, whatever it is for these teams, most everybody's rested.
Yeah.
And that is a new, different thing. We saw just the level of strain and stress that most of these players and teams had coming out of that, you know, into the All-Star break period of midweek game to weekend, and a lot of teams running on fumes.
Plus internationals.
Yeah. Well, if you had injuries like St. Louis or others, like having that month to sort of reset, take a breath.
It felt like Seattle in particular, like that's the team that needed it most. Yeah.
And we'll talk about that more later. Let's jump into the best thing we saw. League's Cup semifinal edition. David Goss, get us started.
Well, I'm obviously going to lean back into what we just said, which is Inter Miami's academy stepping in and playing, you know, their dreams alongside Leo Messi, the closing goal in this game from David Ruiz out of midfield, which he was an MLS Next Pro player 2 months ago. Then he steps on the field. I thought he was awesome in his first ever game. Then he goes to the U20s. And he's gone. Now he comes back in and he plays alongside Sergio Busquets. Like, his world has completely shifted. Doesn't look overawed by it. I think Kramaski's been good as well over this stretch in midfield and like sort of understanding what their job is now, which is different than what it was 2 months ago when they first got into that team. Ruiz is, you know, a deep lying midfielder. He takes that goal really well. And then he gets to spin around and celebrate with DeAndre Yedlin and Leo Messi for like a young kid coming through an academy. These are special moments. This isn't like, you know, a Wish Foundation thing. Like, he's earned the spot. He's a special player, and I think he's going to be a really good player for years to come. But it's just like these little wrinkles of this is cool, this is cool, this is cool. And obviously that one hits me right on my zeitgeist.
For the young guys, and we've been focusing on the Inter-Miami one, but I think it's a really good example of, and I don't want to go against the Play Your Kids movement here because I know I'll get off the A team very quickly, but the way that Inter Miami had to play at times, and Phil Neville, who's on our shows, would be able to tell you better than anybody, who I thought was great on all of our shows. We need to get him on Extra Time, actually.
Yeah, we do.
Sometime. But he, I mean, they played so many young players at once, and that was the big part. And even when I spoke to Wayne Rooney earlier in the year about playing young players, he was saying, I'd prefer not to do 3 or 4 at a time.
Yep, 9 and 2.
Yeah. And so this has been kind of one of the struggles for Inter Miami was Ian Frey and Kermoski playing in the midfield together. And it was like, well, I did one of their games in Montreal where it was like that. And it was difficult. And then suddenly Joseph was frustrated because there's no service. And, you know, Kamal Miller he's looking to play out of the back, and he's looking at young players that aren't quite sure if they want the ball or where it's going to go to. And you're like, why did even Kamal Miller, like, doesn't really make sense with this move. But now the piece is starting to click. But I think it's really, you see the best part of the young players where you have a better platform to do it when you have a Busquets, or even if you're Noah Allen and you've gotten minutes, but you're developing. But I promise you, playing with Jordi Alba or watching him every day and then coming in is a better way to kind of like move in your career, get minutes and grow in a responsible way than necessarily just being thrown out there, having bad experiences, getting experience. Sure, it's great. But I think having a better platform for it, and you can see the difference.
Doyle, best thing you saw?
What did I say was the best thing I saw? Oh, Sam Surridge being what we all hoped that Hani Mukhtar would get. I think we all wanted this for Hani, right?
Like, it's like, when you come down those stairs on Christmas morning, Hani, I hope you have a Sam Surridge under the tree.
I admire so much about Nashville's original roster build. I admire so much about the patience they showed with Hani, because he wasn't great that first year, but he's on a 3-year run now that is one of the best, if not the... It's like Robbie Keane and Giovinco are the only players, I think, in terms of just like box score productivity, who are at or better than what Hani Mukhtar has been for 3 years. And they've done good work getting guys, you know, veteran attackers like Fafa Picot and Teal Bunbury. They had CJ Sapong for a while. Guys who can do a job. But they never had that other high-level answer in the attack. They tried Yonder Cadiz, and he wasn't it. They tried Ake Loba, and he really wasn't it. And we all said on this show and everywhere else that, you know, you could find us idiots, like, God, imagine how good Hani would be if you gave him a high level number 9 to play with. And it's early. Sam Surridge just played 104 minutes. So it's like, it's very early days. He has 3 goals in 104 minutes. I think all 3 came off of Hani assists. Like, going into the Club America game, Hani had 1 goal and 1 assist in his previous 10 games. Now he's got 2 goals and 4 assists since then. It's working the way we expected it to work. And a lot of it has been set pieces. A lot of it has been, you know, counterattacks. But there are moments also in possession where it looks really good. And it feels like it could add another dimension to this Nashville team that has lacked enough high-end answers during the most crucial moments in the biggest games. And then we saw what we saw last night. And yeah, that was the best thing I saw. It's nice to see a team that has been patient and done it a different way. I think a really shrewd way. I think Mike Jacobs deserves a lot of credit. I think Gary Smith deserves a lot of credit too. It's nice to see them get rewarded.
You know who doesn't deserve credit? Kalen Carr, who deserted them.
You did.
He picked them to win every single
every
knockout.
Time. You're like, oh, so Nashville's a tournament team. Oh, this team's set up to
they
make a run.
They should have been.
You
they
didn't stand by Sam Surridge.
Well, it has been crazy because I have always felt this Nashville team. You've mentioned it. Set pieces, defensive play.
Well, not always.
Not this year.
Most of the time.
Yeah. But I mean, that, yeah.
Exactly. Till it mattered most.
Yeah. But I kind of let off that because I also felt like it was over-reliant on one player.
Yep.
And honestly, as great as Hani was last night, he hasn't had this incredible Leagues Cup run. Like, he came off the bench against Colorado, got a goal. He's come in. He's done well, but it's actually been Nashville's shown a different side to me. This match against Minnesota, I know they're up a man, but I think they had 4 different goal scorers, five different goal scorers. So that showed to me a little bit more. And you're right, Surridge is like the biggest one of them. But the idea that they have a little bit more to them than I had expected. And for them, I feel like also Leagues Cup has been a breakthrough as far as their form was just poor coming into this tournament. And they looked like they were losing ground on Cincinnati. They lost to them. Now they're like to carry this forward to potentially win a trophy and then to push towards the back half with these new pieces, they look like a different team.
And to do it in the CONCACAF Champions Cup as well. They're qualified, so they will play next year in the region and have a chance to win a regional title.
Are you going to pick them to win a regional title?
I think I'm supposed to pick like the Western Conference couple.
No, we're going to have you predict some standings
so
later.
Devote your
brain space to that. I also love Serge's passing so far.
Yeah.
He needed another outlet on the break too. Somebody who could spin out and receive the ball and connect. And he's
the one time pass we were in the pre-show, Weeby and I were talking about in the around the 80th minute or so, there's a break opportunity for Nashville, and you know, they're crunched into their own end because Monterey were all over them. Hani gets the ball shy of midfield, rides a tackle, and then plays an outside of the boot pass to Surridge, who I thought was just going to, you know, the pass barely made it to him, so I thought it was just going to take it, maybe
play
draw
safe.
A foul.
Yeah.
But he one times it back across the field to a pass I didn't know was there. And like perfectly in stride for, I think it was it Mouil?
Might have been.
Yeah. And it was like little moments like that. It's like can turn into big moments. The kid looks good. He looks really good.
Kaylin, best thing you saw?
I'll go with Joseph Martinez, his goal. I think it was like the third minute in the match. And he just, the run
it's a perfect run. It's a brilliant
run.
Yeah. You only see really brilliant players.
Had he gone back in league history and maybe done some film sessions on, let's say, MLS Cups, early 2010s?
Just sitting in Venezuela, a young
Joseph. Maybe Torino. Might have been in Torino. Don't know.
No, I mean,
I do not think he was in Torino 11 years ago.
That's true.
to check deep and then stretch the field. And the other big thing was the confidence with the finish. I know Andre Blake is one where he didn't get his feet set and he had a tough day overall. But for me, the confidence that it showed as far as taking that, making that run in behind, because at times we haven't seen Joseph really trusting himself to stretch the field the way we've seen him in the past, being that kind of direct option. It helps having Messi, who draws so much attention underneath, where anything coming down is going to suddenly, you know, open up space in behind. But Jack Elliott's generally very good on the turn. He takes a little bit of a bite on that check run from Joseph, who then sprints behind. But the finish showed he was confident. And it made me think back to Lionel Messi handing him those two penalties. Because that was the one where you're like, oh, we're getting this guy going. Like, he's an important piece. Oh, I trust him from the penalty spot. But that's maybe a finish that you don't necessarily see him take if it's not a striker coming in confident to take it first time to strike it like that. So I thought that was sort of like the reverb of those two penalties that Messi had handed him.
The run, for those of you who didn't pick up what we were laying down, Kaylin scored a goal on that exact run. In the 2012 MLS Cup, which Houston unfortunately lost to David Beckham in the LA Galaxy.
It's on Apple TV, I believe.
Is it?
Did they go? I don't know if they went that deep in the crates, but if they didn't.
Is it the Kaylin Carr section?
They better upload it now, yeah.
It's the movement, and then it's just that goal, right?
Yeah,
if you watch it, it's basically the same exact run. And the other note I want to make here.
I think he did it better. A-team, you know?
Joseph was certainly watching that game. He was in Switzerland. He was with Young Boys in Switzerland. That was his first team in Europe. He moved from Caracas to BSC Young.
A young boy.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was in Europe. Yeah,
he was a young boy.
Well, I mean, Switzerland is fairly Torino's sort of up there in the mountains.
It's Turin for starters.
That's true. But,
so come on.
Okay.
But also, I saw. So Joseph scores. He wheels around to celebrate, and obviously, camera immediately goes to Messi, and Messi, you can see him mouthing just like Kaylin.
Yeah, it was.
He's like,
Como Kaylin Carr. Como Kaylin Carr.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Best thing I saw, Instagram reporting this morning, Hani Mukhtar obviously going back and watching the highlights of his own victory against Monterey and his own goal that was taken off the board.
Brutal.
Just a terrible call. That's my opinion. It's also Hani Mukhtar's opinion. This is his quote, Hani's words. Just he said it. He wrote it. This is it. The biggest scam of my career. Please, I need an explanation. Then head blown emoji times two. If you didn't see this goal, Hani Mukhtar picks it up on the left edge of the area, takes a beautiful touch inside to avoid the Monterey pressure, and then just a perfect. You can see
it was
see
a Nacho Piatti goal.
Yeah, you can see it exactly what's going to happen as it develops.
Yeah,
he curls it to the back post. It hits side netting. It's a perfect goal. Nashville are up in the first half. This amazing Hani Mukhtar moment, like one to celebrate, to remember, to be replayed forever. Only know the referee, goalie counted on the field, gets a call from his video assistant referee, goes to the monitor, says no goal for offside on a, I mean, look, if you hadn't seen the replay, if you hadn't had it broken down, and I thought Higginbotham did a great job on the broadcast, you probably wouldn't know why it was called offside. It was because Alex Mouille comes into the play late. And the rule is, quote, clearly attempting to play a ball which is close when this action impacts on an opponent. So Alex Mouille, like, he airheads this ball. I mean, it
comes across it.
He's a good 5-6 feet away from making contact, but he does stick as he jumps and he like kind of makes a heading motion.
I think, yeah, to me, the reason it's the wrong call is because everything's already happening before that.
Correct. Happens. It doesn't.
The goalkeeper has
the
already
action
made
has
his
to
dive.
Impact yes. the opponent.
The goalkeeper's already made his dive.
Right.
The ball's already moving where it's yep. moving. Where we had this debate a few weeks ago about Joseph, which right. I thought impacted the goalkeeper's positioning. Wheel's not camped out near the goalkeeper where they think they have to react in that play. It's bang, bang, and Wheel just misses. It was a bad call. It took away a great goal.
That is a bad call as well, but CONCACAF VAR giveth and taketh away because Lucas McDonough, clearly committed a penalty in the second half. Like, it was a very obvious kick through the back of the Rayados player penalty, and it didn't get called. So
the soccer gods even it up?
For the first time in a long time, MLS can look at a call against Monterrey and say, hey, we got the best of that probably on balance. Second best thing I saw.
Also, can I just add? Yeah. I love that Hani's, they win the match, yeah. and he's going home being like, man, they got me. They took that one away from
That's
me.
That's not right. That's not injustice. Right. Injustice. We're going to the final. We got that bonus. You know, SBJ is saying there's a lot of millions of dollars in the line, but I'm watching this back. I'm instant replaying this, so to speak.
Speaking of getting your goals, Fafa should not have shot that. He has a layup.
Did you see Surridge standing there, two hands? Like
he has, because it's wide open.
The rock.
And he shoots from no angle high. But it goes in, so it doesn't matter.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Celebrate it. By the way, the second best thing was Tata Martino. Did you see him wearing the penny around his neck?
Yeah.
He said after the game, why did he do that? Porque soy gordito y me gusta, which is basically I'm chubby and it fit me tight. Which I thought that was very self-aware from Tata. I just come out and say it.
Why are you looking at this end of the table when you're talking about chubby people?
It's just, I'm not. I just, A-team. All right, let's get into it. Nitty gritty. How did Miami get it done against Philly? Takeaways from this match. Was it Miami getting it done, or was it Philly not stepping up and meeting a big moment?
Don't ask me first. Ask someone else first.
I felt like both. I think Miami's a nightmare team to go down against, we're finding. It's kind of difficult to try to climb your way back. So I think that was a big part of it. I think part of it also was just the pieces they had. No Carranza, then they didn't play Ura, who I thought was going to play from the start, but he's not really been favored at all. Some of the
2 goals in 4 months.
Yeah. I mean, but as far as pedigree, he's generally played over Donovan in the past, and Donovan, I know, scored in the last match late on. So maybe that's why he gets the start, but I thought they missed that, that cutting edge up top for sure. And then, I don't know. It just seemed that the other thing for me is just the way, just the Messi effect for me. And we've tried to detail it a couple times. I was going through it the last round on the wrap-up show, but it just changes the way you have to defend. Like the Joseph goal, there's like 4 guys that kind of take a step towards Messi, and then that it opens up that space in behind.
It's the Jordi Alba goal that really.
Yeah. Well, the second one too, though, actually, it shows what happens if you actually play it honest. And that's where they, like, absolutely crush Joseph Martinez, Damian Lowe does. And then it opens up space, though, to Messi. And yes, Blake as well needs to do better on that one. But it's, again, if you do it that way, you leave space for Messi. And everybody's like, how does Messi have all this space? It's like, because you're trying to defend the other players. And then if you go all towards Messi, like the last goal especially was, Martinez jumps exactly. He's almost defending behind. He's like the 6. And he's defending to not allow the back pass to Messi, which then allows Robert Taylor to just kind of turn forward and take his space, which he does well. And then suddenly the line is high. There's no pressure there and finds the easy ball in behind to Jordi Alba. But it just changes the way teams aren't defending Miami like you would normally play a game because Messi is that devastating that you have to change the whole way you're thinking, your entire model. It's the same system, but just this individual decisions you're making. Put yourself in these impossible decisions where you're saying, well, am I going to leave Messi and go to the other guy, or am I going to like, it's just a really difficult one. And once you follow behind, they just compound and just make it so much more difficult for you.
I'm glad we started with Kalen, because I think there's a lot of positive for Inter Miami, and they're fun and they scored a ton of goals. But it's hard for me to walk away from this game and not say that Andre Blake's been one of the biggest match winners in MLS over that stretch. You talk about Hani Mukhtar, 5 years, 4 or 5 year stretch. You could say Andre Blake's been as important to his team and as high a performer as anyone in Major League Soccer. And this was maybe the worst performance I've ever seen him have. So yeah, it's tough to go behind. As many breakdowns as there are for Philly, Andre Blake's off his, completely off his goal for the opening Joseph Martinez goal. It shouldn't go in. He's slightly off it for the Messi goal as well. But the Martinez one to me is like, you never see Andre Blake make that mistake. This was a big stage. You don't have Carranza. We don't know how fit Bedoya really is. You didn't start McGlynn, which, whatever, that's a decision. Like, you're down pieces for a team that can't really afford to be down pieces. You're on a big stage in a big moment. And so they could not overcome an Andre Blake poor performance. Like, look at this team through the first 3 months of this season with Bendick in there instead of Blake. They were out of the playoffs. And then, whether it was because of CCL or injury, Blake comes back in and they've been on one of the best runs in the league. That's how important he is. So it's hard for me to walk away from this game and not start there of like, if Andre Blake's going to have a performance like that, Philly's not going to beat anyone. It doesn't matter if Messi's on the field or it's Inter Miami. There's not
a
team.
To be fair, Philly would beat the Red Bulls because Andre Blake had a performance like that in the 2019 Eastern Conference.
Yeah. And he had it in Cup last year too, which unfortunately,
I don't think that was on him in Cup.
There were moments there that
he wasn't
different.
Great, but like, he was a disaster in the first half of that Red Bull, which they eventually won 4-3. But this was probably the worst game in Andre Blake's career, and like, the Union need him to be better. On top of that, though, Kalen's right talking about how uncomfortable it is to try to defend against Messi and Busquets, because Busquets, we know, is one of the best force magnifiers who's ever played the game, right? He makes everybody better because his decisions are so perfect and his passing is so perfect. It's always, you know, to the right foot, in stride, all that makes it easier. That, I think that's uncomfortable for even the best players in the world to try to defend against. But then on top of that, the new shape from the Union playing a 3-4-2-1, because this is a team that's been primarily a 4-4-2 diamond, right? And then we've seen a 3-5-2 over the past, you know, few months. We've seen that. We haven't seen a lot of 3-4-2-1. It did not look great against DC United, and it did not look great against Querétaro. It is not surprising that it did not look great against Inter Miami, because if you're taking the extra half a beat to think about your positioning and what you're supposed to be doing and who's covering this space and who's going with the, you know, the attacker. Like, look at Jakob Glesnes on that third goal. He's completely lost.
In the mud.
And there's, like, Jack Elliott's playing everything onside time and time again. The Union just looked uncomfortable. And, like, part of that is, like, yeah, Messi is, like, like, I'm glad I don't have to defend him. That looks really uncomfortable to try to figure out how to do that. But you add on the change in shape and principles of play. No two forwards, pressing two center backs. Like, it was tough. And I think Jim Curtin is one of the best coaches in the league. He did not cover himself in glory last night.
And I would add, I think this is the first time Flock and Bueno have started together. I think McGlynn starts if Messi's not playing. Like, I think Jim was scared to have that midfield set up and have McGlynn be one of the ones who would have to defend and chase consistently against Messi. Jack McGlynn gives them a different look than what they're capable of. Now, in fairness, they created chances. Gosdag puts away that chance down the middle. It's 1-1. I think the buildings, you know, behind Philly, like, I think things shift. They had chances in the second half as well. Not that maybe they were going to come back from three goals down, but like, they had opportunities. That goes into a Philly convo, which we sort of set up in the last show, of all these semis and finals they haven't gotten over the top. And this is another one of like missed opportunities. But I think not having McGlynn in there from the start was an effect for their ability to break down Miami, which we are starting to see. You have to score to beat this team. You're not going to shut them out. This is the best defense in Major League Soccer. This is the best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer. There could be multiple reasons why Andre Blake was off his game, but the second time in 5 years he's off his game was this one against this team. Dallas gave up 4. Charlotte gave up 4. Like, you need to score goals. And so you need to put a lineup out there that's capable of hurting Miami in the deficiencies that they leave there. And not having McGlynn as part of this, missing Carranza, massive.
Huge.
Yeah. But he's the best passing center forward in the league.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everything about what he would have brought to the team. I mean, Donovan makes the run out wide to pull a player for Gozdak to create that chance. He's just not he doesn't affect the game in any way. And not having him available, I think, also then puts that pressure on other people where you just get a little bit tighter.
You saying that about your Drexel Dragon? Just can't believe it.
Yeah.
Credit to Tata Martino, if we're talking about coaching. You know, 21 goals scored in 6 games. They had scored 22 prior to that. Plus 14 goal differential from the moment he arrived. I know he had Lionel Messi, Sergio Busquets, now Jordi Alba, all these U22 signings coming in. He got it right immediately. He figured it out. And he put players in positions to be successful. He didn't overcomplicate it, I don't think. And he got buy-in. Now, it's easy to get by when you have Lionel Messi and you're winning every game. When you're scoring 4 goals a game and you're going on a big run and, you know, the vibes are at an all-time high, it's easy to get some buy-in there. Oh, you're taking off the blazer. It's getting a little hot.
I feel like we're moving into other conversations as well.
But it's not
it back on when we get to Leafs Cup final preview.
It's not dissimilar to me to sort of what he did with an Atlanta team in the sense that from the moment he arrived, he figured out how the pieces fit in the best possible way and communicated his style of play and the way he wanted him to play and had him running from the jump.
He also, and we talk about this with a lot of managers, we talk about this with Wilfried Nancy a ton. He is a big manager with a massive career, and he finds players who he believes in that other people maybe haven't, or they haven't been given opportunities. And he brings them in and he says, I think you're capable of this. We saw it with Joseph originally, right? He was a winger in Torino. You finally got Torino in the proper spot. Then he brings him in, he turns him into right? Gives him the opportunity to play in his proper position. Tito Villalba, Yamil Assad. Now you look at the young guys, one. Like, if you're Benjamin Kramaski and Tata Martino comes up to you and says, I think you're special. I think you can be a difference maker for this team. You're going to run through every wall anyone's ever built in Miami, which are probably pretty flimsy because it's like a fake city and stuff. You know what I mean? But
or if you're one of the 3 U22 signings they made.
That's his bread and butter is like, because for some of these guys, like, I didn't even know he'd know who I am. Right. And then it's like, no, I watched you at Newell's and San Lorenzo and wherever. And I think you're special and you can be a part of this team. He clearly has that ability to create that environment. And then Messi helps.
It does help. We'll talk more about this roster in the final preview. Let's get to the other side of the final. Nashville. I didn't think that they had it. I thought they were going to lose Monterey.
So did I.
Remember, even right before halftime, I texted you guys like, this is setting up perfectly for the Monterey, like, rip your heart out.
Yeah, I threw up the Grim Reaper gif on Twitter, and I was like, Monterey, when any MLS team gets hope, and then somehow, some way.
Nashville with the first goal from Hani that we've talked about and he's talked about and everybody's talking about, I thought they should have up 2 goals too, because then Muil had the big chance right afterwards. So I thought it was going to be 2-0. I think Monterrey did come and get a chance as well too, but I thought at that point I was like, oh, Monterrey has like gotten the edge. And that's where, especially when they got the other penalty that should have been a penalty as well, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is it. This is a wrap. And they were going to put that one away. So I don't know. It was end-to-end. Monterrey has been, they've impressed me this tournament. It's kind of been talked about a bunch, but just what they've had to do as far as, you know, how many matches they've played, how many different cities they've played, who they've played against, going against Tigres, going against LAFC, then going to Nashville. I mean, it was really impressive to see what they put out there.
And
the injuries,
big pieces, yeah.
Yeah, Bertharame being gone.
Bertharame changes this game. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Funes Mori is not
the biggest.
I think they scored one outfield goal in the knockout rounds.
The one moment I would say, and this is where it goes back between how well do these teams really know each other and how much time do you have to prepare. But the goal that they concede that ends up being the Surridge goal comes straight from Andrada, the goalkeeper, and he plays. They split wide. They split their center backs. They play that long ball. And it's to Funes Mori, who they trust, right? He's that 9, and we see a lot of teams do this, dropping a little bit deeper. to try to get that hold up play. And Funes Mori is one of the best in this region as far as just holding the ball up. The problem was that matched up with him was Walker Zimmerman. Yeah. And you would think with the national team and all that, you would know by now, you cannot throw up an alley-oop and allow this man a run up.
Funes Mori was Sean Bradley in this situation.
Yeah.
Sean Kemp got a running start.
Especially if
you
split your center backs wide and you have Hani Mukhtar standing straight in front of your goalkeeper up the middle. So that was the one where it's literally dunk, straight to Hani, layoff, goal, ball game, right? And those are the small little margins we talked about, who, you know, who's available or injuries. But I felt like from the, as far as understanding or scouting or the tactical matchup or understanding the personnel in those fine margins in a knockout tournament like this, that was one where you just can't make a mistake like that. You have to go outside to those fullback, to Shaq Moore or to Lovitz. Every team in MLS would know better than to do that. I don't know if they all do it, but that fact that you would play that ball right there and reminded me, I sent in the group chat last night of the it was the U.S. against Canada.
Yeah, in Canada on that concrete, that frozen concrete.
Where, yeah, we kind of like turn our lofts up, kind of a little soft one. You know, those big center backs for Canada.
Who's we in this scenario?
Oh, sorry.
Are you Canada or the U.S.?
I don't know if you remember, but Bojan did that. Bojan, the Canadian goalkeeper whose name I just
butchered. Did it against Morocco?
No, he did it against the U.S. in that same game. Weston McKennie just couldn't finish it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about when he got chipped against Morocco because he turned it over straight up the middle of the field.
Yeah. It's. I mean, it's especially the way teams split their center backs and want to have the option to be short and build out. I understand why teams do it. It's just that matchup specifically was not.
You can't do it against Nashville.
Yeah.
It's a moment where Monterrey relaxes back into their DNA rather than, as you said, processing their game plan against an opponent because they didn't have the time to prep for it like you would for a semifinal.
I don't know, man. It sounds just an individual mistake because Walker Zimmerman's one of the first things you prep for. Every set piece defense matchup you draw up is like, this dude's dominant.
You want to bet me money? Monterrey does that in every game.
No, I don't disagree. I just don't think the idea that they didn't know who Walker Zimmerman is plausible. It was just a mistake in the moment.
Yeah, but I think those, if you don't know him well, that I think that's maybe it. Where as Andrada as a goalkeeper, if you see this dude all the time, you're probably like, yes,
yeah,
it's been the scouting
put
report.
It out of bounds. Like,
it's like, you know when we're going through Atletico San Luis's lineup, it's like, I know the lineup, but I haven't spent a lot of time with these guys. So, you know, in the wrap-up.
And by the way, this is DP, Walker Zimmerman is a DP, to Hani Mukhtar is a DP, to Sam Surge is a DP. We talk about Nashville needing match winners in the biggest games and not having had enough and... Like that's the play you want if you're Gary Smith. This is it. And like they did a good job, I thought, of pressing in that moment, bringing their line way up. They never let Monterrey until Monterrey was throwing the kitchen sink in the last 10 minutes. They never let Monterrey get entirely comfortable and like really understand where the line of confrontation was going to be from minute to minute. I thought they did it's Nashville, so it tended to be a lower block, but like they were changing that up, and I thought they were changing up their pressing triggers a little bit as well. Really well done, really well prepped from this team. Not always the prettiest, but it's not supposed to be pretty. When you're playing a team against Monterrey, you're just supposed to get the job done, and they deserve all the credit in the world for having done so.
Well done to LA Panico, too. You're talking about Andre Blake and the moments that were or weren't for him, but for Panico, when he had to step up, when he needed to make a big save, he got it done.
The helmet community. I just like to see him maybe go with the tuck. He's right there. Yeah. He's right on the
edge. Goalkeeper's tuck? Can you get extension on a tuck?
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's actually more reasonable for a goalkeeper.
Joe Cannon tuck? Joe Cannon feels like he tucked. John Bush definitely tucked.
Oh, John elite tuck. I play with him.
John Bush
Chicago.
Wakes up with the tuck.
He tucked he would tuck a jacket in his shorts.
That's how you play 41 years in professional soccer. Oh,
that's advanced.
Just imagine waking up with a tuck. Just getting out of bed fully tucked. Oh, that's good stuff. All right, let's transition to the actual final here and get the head-to-head going. 9 p.m. Eastern, as I said, MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Nashville hosting Inter-Miami at Geodis Park. A first final for both clubs. Of course, a first final at Geodis Park. Both joined in 2020, which is interesting. Same year, the pandemic year. Very strange year. Both made the playoffs in that weird 2020 season. I believe Nashville
hosted.
Did they win? Was yes. like a, was it like 0-0?
No, they annihilated them. Blaze Matuidi, you're on your coffin.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's a good spot. Blaze Matuidi, I think, got an early red card because he didn't care. And Nashville ran them off the field.
Mm.
I remember Dax got into the open field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of his three impressive goals.
Yeah.
This fascinates me in just where these clubs sit. Of like, I went back through it. So Nashville has 11 players on their roster who are on their roster that 2020 year. They started six of them in the game against Monterey. Miami has three players that are still on their roster. Only one plays in Drake Callender, who didn't play in 2020. Gary Smith was hired at the end of 2017 to manage Nashville.
Beginning April 2017, right?
I don't know. That date gets confusing. Nashville doesn't have the website connected anymore. So it's been harder to find.
Regurgitating your own facts.
Yeah, I know, which I kept pushing at you. So
like, it was April.
That's my fault.
I was like, make sure you get that right.
Yeah. He was hired in 2017 to manage them for 2 years in USL before they became an MLS team. No one has managed Inter Miami for as long. If you go back to the date Gary Smith was announced, his time with the USL squad, Inter Miami's had as an MLS team. And you talk about them coming in, it was like, you know, it was like Minnesota and Atlanta, where everyone was like, Miami's going to change the league. They're going to sign James Rodriguez. They're going to sign Messi. They're going to be the best team we've ever seen. Marcelo Gallardo is going to be their manager. And then Nashville was us questioning if Anibal Godoy was worth a trade and how much allocation money
How stupid do we look in that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it was $600,000. Yep. Really, this is absurd.
It was unprecedented. It was Dom Dwyer-esque numbers at the time.
Yeah.
But they saw the vision of where it was going. Mike Jacobs, I think, has led a lot of the understanding the trends in MLS and bringing in. They brought in Daniel Lovitz, right? They brought in Dax. They brought in Godoy. They brought in Wheel in that season. And now you see moves like Jacob Schaffelberg and Fafa Pico of like, we think these guys can work better for us than they work for other teams. And I think Schaffelberg's the best example of it. And it's just two clubs. I think it's a good example that there are multiple ways to do it in MLS. Obviously, getting Messi changes things, but like Miami set themselves up over the last year and a half for this to happen. Nashville has set themselves up. Hani was signed before they entered Major League Soccer, and now he's the guy. So it's cool to see the different styles. It's cool to see it work out for both franchises and for them to sort of have that guiding light. I worry about saying that word around Miami over the last 4 years, but they're both in a final now.
I just was looking back at the highlights of that match. You're right, Dax did carry the ball about 30 yards and score the goal. And then Hani gets one from the penalty spot. Do you know who the goalkeeper was for Inter Miami?
I was going to ask when we talked about Drake Callender not playing. So Marsman was
It was Luis
there.
Robles.
Nope.
No.
Good guess, though.
I don't got it.
John McCarty.
Whoa. Helmet community.
Yeah. All the helmets.
This is pre-helmet, I think. Yeah, there's no helmet here.
Oh, well, that's why he gave up the goal.
Whoa. Let's not put too much power in the helmet right now. This is sort of a poetic matchup in some ways. We have to say, in all the praise for Nashville, that they did swing and miss on number nines for a long while there.
It's not about getting 100%. I know. It's the fact they've been in the playoffs every year.
I agree. And the ambition was always there.
They're good year to year.
They spent on Aki Loba. That was ambition. It just crashed and burned. But then they came back and did it again after having to take the L on him with Surge. So I give that ownership group credit, whether it be the stadium they built, the team that they built, the faith they had to go with the plan that they had. And you have to give Miami the same credit. I know that they had a misstep, so to speak.
The credit for Miami deserved is the ambition.
Right. Well, and also the patience.
And the hiring of Chris Henderson.
Right.
Yes.
Chris Henderson has done just a remarkable job.
Although I'm pretty sure they could have hired Chris Henderson before their expansion year.
They could have, but you know what? There's a lot of teams who keep making the same mistake.
Learn from your mistakes.
Over and over again. Miami learned from their mistake, and they've made a lot, and they made big ones right out the gate. But they got a guy, like, look, Chris Henderson was part of the group that built that Seattle dynasty in the mid-teens.
I love the past tense.
Right. Well, it's over now.
Right,
Anders? Anders is still stuck in Iceland.
And if you look at that Miami roster using the numbers released by the MLSPA, the Players Association, like that is as clean a cap as you could possibly get. Like, they use their allocation money really well. They have the ability then to go out and make trades, like the Bryce Duke for Kamal Miller trade.
Although they got allocation money in that trade.
Which they, yeah. So. Which is still incredible to me. And then, you know, they believed in their academy kids. So, getting a GM who understands what the vision is, and I don't know if this is, you know, Jorge Mas's vision or Chris Henderson's vision or a combination of two, but regardless, understands what the vision is.
David Beckham was a big part of it as well.
Yeah, fair point. And then understanding the intricacies of MLS in order to make it functionally possible to build a team like this. It's really impressive. It's really impressive. And look, I texted it last night, or I tweeted it last night. 10 of the 11 starters for Miami are full internationals. 10 of the 11. They also brought two more in Campana and Gomez off the bench.
And you're not even talking about Robbie Robinson in that.
Former number one pick, Robbie Robinson. They have the most expensive center back in league history coming in, the Argentinian kid.
Toto. Aviles.
Aviles. Thank you. Yep. They also have a new attacking midfielder / winger coming in from Argentina, who was good a couple of years ago, has kind of stagnated since then, but like a big U22 signing. People are,
and Gregory,
and sounds well, like. I was gonna say, and they have Gregory and Jean Mota injured, and Stefanelli, and Negri, and Corentin Jean. Like, they have had the ability to go out and keep adding pieces because they're not overpaying for guys. And they kept it clean and they kept it sensible. And that allowed them to just plug and play when you get Messi and Busquets and Alba. And suddenly everybody's 25 to 50% better because, again, like, Busquets and Messi are two of the greatest force magnifiers ever to play the game.
Who's the favorite in this match, this final? At Geodis Park, so Nashville have the home advantage.
Yeah, I think it's Miami. With the way Miami has played, with the run they're on, with the confidence they're in, Caitlin doesn't know about screenshots, so he has to take a
picture. He's screenshotting the list of available players, by the way, because we're going to do one player to take in the Golden Boot update draft soon. So he and Tommy Scoops are over here sidebarring. I just wanted that to be known.
Disgusting stuff. Disgusting stuff. But I think it's Miami with the way they're playing and the fact that in the run of play, they will have more of the ball. And they will have opportunities. That doesn't mean 100% that they control the flow of the game, but I think it will feel that way. I think either way, they've already won, right? They made it to a final.
Who?
I think this experience for Miami was, like, if this is all that happens this season, right?
If they get this far and then they fall short of it.
But they made it CONCACAF Champions Cup. They've put themselves on display. Everyone from Monterey and Milwaukee and everywhere else has bought their, you know, subscriptions, and they're logged in to watch every Miami game from here on out. Like, I just, sorry, didn't mean to go there, big picture. I don't know. Yeah. I know you don't like the top
first trophy in club
history.
I'm
allergic to narratives.
So. Yeah, I know you hate that, but sorry. So I still think Miami are the favorites. Can I ask a question? Or are we going to do more?
No.
Do you start Sam Surge?
Yes. Teal Bonberry has been good at, you know, and he scored a couple goals in this tournament. But like, his ability, Surge's ability to change the point of attack with a touch on the break, and he just looks more comfortable in the box. Like, he's a goal scorer.
Why is it Andor? Why is it not Inter Miami gives up chances, especially centrally? Start right. Both of them, play Hani underneath. And then play either Nungana or Davis with Bedoya and Dan.
Because I think you get enough on both sides of the ball from Fafa on the left and Muil on the right if you play that 4-4-1-1 or 4-4 flat 4-4-2. So I think you just go with Hani in that free role underneath your goal scorer.
We're assuming Jacob Schaffelberg will not be available.
Yeah.
Which is a considerable loss.
It's a pretty big loss too,
especially the way Inter Miami, if you want to turn them over and try to turn them around, use the flanks.
Look at what Dallas did. It was about pace.
Yeah,
but Fafa brings a decent amount of that as well.
I think Schaffelberg.
Schaffelberg doesn't have a handbrake.
It's a little bit more direct.
It's a little bit more out of control. Yeah, there's more of a vibe to it.
Yeah.
But I think you're sort of getting this.
I think there's a mullet, and he runs
I was texting.
Fast.
So I have another friend of mine who's logged in for the Leagues Cup. He's a Monterrey fan. He lives
Kalen's
in Monterrey.
Popular.
Rayados, yeah. So he bought season pass because he's like, man, there's nothing happening.
Some disciples out here, dude. In, they're like following you.
There's no Liga MX. So he's like, I have to watch Monterrey. They're playing all these teams. And then once the Tigres, he actually flew to Houston. I got him tickets to that match. Shout out to Houston for hooking that up. But I was telling him about Schaffelberg because he was like, I'm worried about Mukhtar, man. I'm worried about him.
And
I was
like,
watch out for Jacob.
I was like, also, Nova there's Scotian. This guy Schaffelberg. He's like, who is he? And I was like, he's kind of like a Canadian Antuna a little bit. I wasn't sure if that was a good.
Yeah, it's a good
it's
one.
Pretty
Early
good
Antuna, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I
so
like that.
He was right. But they're going to miss him. He just brings something like, you know, very different, more direct, as you said. So
he's got a wake.
Yeah.
And like Hani likes to follow in that wake, basically.
Yeah.
It tends to work out pretty well for them. I think the Surridge decision comes down to fitness. I mean, if he has 65 or
How
70.
How much did he play in this game?
The second half.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But if that's all he has, do you want that to start or do you want to finish? And Teal Bunbury can put the center backs under pressure.
You just said you don't want to go down against Miami.
Right? I think against this Miami team, you want it to start.
All right. Any other tactical nuggets that you would point out before we move on to MLS and match day 27?
I think it's going to be a flat 4-4-2. I think Miami's been really, really good. Like I said, I think they probably have the most talent of any team in MLS on that roster. They still look vulnerable. Philly could have walked away with 3 goals last night. And I do feel that in the same way, the Monterrey game set up pretty well for Nashville, with Monterrey coming upfield, having a lot of the ball, trying to crack them open and allowing space on the counter. I think this sets up really well for Nashville. I really do. Kalen, do you want to make a prediction?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Messi in this. I feel pretty good about that. Yeah.
Nashville
I've gone
away.
Against Nashville. I've been impressed, but the way this Miami team has turned around, and I think you're right to point out Busquets as well, because he's just been ridiculous. Yeah. Just like the way he's able to find the pass before the pass that ends up unlocking the whole thing. So I think Nashville will feel comfortable with that setup.
Yeah,
for sure.
They're probably like, okay, like this is going to be harder just because it's Lionel Messi, but like we've played like this a lot in big games, we know what we're doing. If I set the over under on goals, I was going to say 3.5, but I think everybody would hammer the over on 3.5.
I'd go over.
Yeah. What if I set it at 4.5?
Under.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think Nashville's the most competent defensive team Miami have.
I said that about Philly.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be awesome. 9 p.m. Saturday.
Garrett, go 4-4-2. Start Hani at the point of a diamond. Make Busquets chase him.
Nashville also did get in a shootout earlier in the tournament
against Toluca. But Toluca played that 3-5-2, of course. I mean, essentially with Messi coming inside on the right, Yedlin going up, it's not even a 3-5-2 that Miami's playing. It's like a 2-3-5. You know, like it's wild how attacking they are. So much fun.
I'm going Miami too. You guys picking Nashville? Anybody?
I'm gonna pick Nashville.
I'll pick Nashville.
Nice. Table split. We'll see how that works out. All right, third place games
but
at 6 p.m.
In the
Eastern.
End, the only person I'm rooting for is Leagues Cup.
There you go.
Rob Lowe.
And I'm wearing my MLS jersey. And fortunately, I win no matter what. MLS wins. Woo! Third place game stakes. Philly hosting Monterrey. This is a CONCACAF Champions Cup spot, but really only for Philly and also strangely for Club León. If Monterrey win, then León will get that spot, which, look, no offense to the Union, who will probably get in as well through the Supporters Shield standings or perhaps MLS Cup, knock on wood. I would love to see León in this tournament just because they won the final CCL. I just think that would be fitting.
But they still have the ability to qualify.
No, the Liga MX spots are set. Oh. They were based on last year's Apertura and Clausura. So Pachuca, Toluca, Club America, Monterrey, Chivas, and Tigres are in. So this would be the last opportunity, I believe, for a Liga MX team to get in, and that is if Monterrey win. If Philly win, obviously they will qualify, and then their spot in the MLS Supporters Shield standings, should they get one of the top four spots, I believe, would bump down to the next team, but it's all a little bit complicated. The other spots available still are in the Open Cup. Miami, Cincinnati, Houston, RSL are there. Cincinnati looks like they'll for sure get one via the Supporters Shield or the Supporters Shield standings. MLS Cup will get one.
Wait, did you just guarantee a Supporters Shield win for...
No, I said they'll get one either via the Shield or... Because the top four teams will get in. And right now, I don't think three other teams aren't going to catch Cincinnati.
Okay.
But you're not willing to.
I'm not going to guarantee the Shield, though. I think they'll win it.
Okay.
That seems like a curse that I would not put on Cincinnati.
It seems weak, actually.
All right. Match day 20. I think I've done it before. I feel like I did it before this League's Cup thing even started, so I'll refer back to that one. The Golden Boot update's the most important thing we should do, although we'll dig into everything else. Number one right now are the Fighting Tom and Kalen's 66 goals and 39 assists. It's really an annihilation of the rest of us. Dave, you've got 58 goals. You're in second.
Yeah. This is the worst time to be in second.
I know. I've got 51 goals.
Can we make a snake draft?
Doyle also has 51 goals, but I have 26 assists to Doyle's 21. So your underperformance, Doyle, lands you the number one pick.
But you've got better team chemistry because people are willing to share.
No, for me, honestly, it's just injuries, right?
Can you unblack
injuries? Injuries robbed Willy Agata of most of the season. We finally saw him come back.
Willy Agata robbed Willy Agata of.
No, he had a broken leg. Chicharito, obviously he's done for the year.
Weeby's big shouldn't have broke his leg energy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Sergio Cordova missed a bunch of time with injuries. Giacomo Vrioni missed a bunch of time with injuries. Duncan McGuire missed a bunch of time with injuries. Klaus is still out.
How many healthy players
did
you want?
You expected to get more out of Duncan McGuire at this point?
I did.
Jeez.
I did.
Anyway, you've got the first pick. So
Doyle,
who are you taking?
Doyle, I will trade you.
Oh, yeah.
Daniel Gosdag and Cucho Hernandez for your pick. And my pick.
Their future goals, not their present goals. Yeah. The future goals.
Whoa. And my pick.
No, Anders, stay out of this. This has been decided. It's future goals. You get to hold on to the current goals.
Wait, so
what are you offering?
Just so I know, does that mean if I draft a player coming up that I get his past goals?
No, you do not. You only get future goals from now on.
Okay. Thank you.
So you've offered Cucho.
I offered
Gosdag.
My top two goal scorers.
And
your
pick. And your pick.
Well, do I have to offer my pick?
No, you don't. You could offer just those two.
Well, yeah. I'm not going to take just those two.
Okay. What else do you want?
I'm going to take Messi.
Smart play.
I didn't even know that's who you were thinking
especially
of.
Especially because this is a keeper draft, so my team for next year.
Oh, gosh. Good I did plan. Not even take that into consideration.
This is a day that will last a long time.
This is the tentacles from this day stretch far into the future. No wonder Doyle says 2024 is the best season in MLS history. He's going to have Lionel Messi in the Golden Boot draft.
I would have tanked the whole season if I
know. I was straight up. Like, I don't know. I tried to tank based on my selections, and I still couldn't get there. I'm going to go with, obviously, I think Patrick Agüimon is. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just joking.
Come on.
No, I want to do it for the brand, but I know Dave's on the other side, maybe licking his chops there. I am going to go with two players, Sam Surridge or Chicho Arango. I'm going to go with Surridge. Sam Surridge is my choice here. I think the rest of the way, the form, the momentum, Hany Mukhtar, Nashville resurgent, give me Sam Surridge. Who you got, Dave?
So I've written on an envelope that I've enclosed already.
Bongi.
My pick. Kalen, you have the opportunity to trade with me.
Billy Sharp.
Bongi is in that envelope. Do you want Bongi? What are you willing to give up?
I love Bongi. I'm not willing to trade
Tom
up.
Pulled you away?
I'm not
Tom
willing
pulled
to
you
trade
off the
up. Wow.
You don't believe in Bongi?
He's trading from a position of strength, though. We're all trading from positions of weakness, unfortunately.
I'll give you Bongi for your pick and Shaqiri.
I'm willing to entertain offers for Shaqiri.
but is Tom
future second
have
round
you discussed
pick.
This with Tom?
No, I haven't. I'm texting him right now. Messi
Tom's
and
actually
Surridge
breaking
the board.
Tom's actually breaking the news about this draft while we're
on
doing
Twitter.
It.
Yeah. Aaron Bupenza is available here.
Bupenza is an interesting Timu one.
Mukhtar is available.
I think
Bakrar.
I think Bakrar is a really interesting one because he will play center forward.
He will.
Feels like NYCFC have solidified. It feels like it's going to clean things up.
Schwanier. Still up.
Yeah. Still out there.
Nobody took Brian White in the original, and Christian Ramirez is available as well.
I'm going to take Chicho Arango.
Okay. That made sense.
So that's
that was a smart pick.
Am I supposed to write this somewhere?
No, Anders will handle all the logistics here. Okay. All right. A combination Tom Kalen decision here.
Are there timeouts here? Can I call? Can I phone a friend? Come on, Tom. Where you at, man? All right. We, with the fourth pick in the Golden Boot midseason edition draft.
Yeah.
We are proud to welcome to the Supporter Shield leaders, Tom and Kalen squad.
Rafael Navarro.
Diego Rossi.
Okay. That's good choice. Good, yeah. Yeah, I like the choice. Okay.
Did the text just come in?
No, we've been texting. Okay. I was screening, you know, you saw
was that unanimous show. Or was there a split opinion on that one?
No, I think it was unanimous. I got to double check. We have to live with our decisions either way.
It was made. It's on paper.
I do think Surge may have gone a little high. I
think so.
I think there's some recency bias. I mean, he's done very well.
I mean, he's an equal goal scorer to Messi right now.
He is. But I think Rossi is going to...
He's ahead of Messi.
The way this...
why did they even sign
it's Duncan Maguire like pace from him.
The way this Columbus team scores goals, the way this attack moves, and the goals have been vacated. I lost Celarayan, by the way. He was also on our squad.
Oh, interesting.
So this is, in some ways, like really change. Just
wait, I have looked to see
filling
I
in
lost?
The goals.
So Bongi is still available.
Yeah, but nobody can choose it. We only had one pick. Yeah. So he's just on
if
the board.
If there was pass goals, I was like, man.
Yeah, snatch it up.
This dude's just banged sure. seven.
All right, look,
well, you don't get
back.
League's Cup
oh, we don't get League's Cup.
For
the
match
only
day
person
27.
I've lost is Lewis Morgan.
Yeah,
and he's still in the league.
That's true. Enzo Capetti seems like he might be lost. He's just disappeared. Mikel Uwe, for me, also lost. Driussi, that was my keeper. My team's bad, as Anders is reminding me. Thank you. All right, match day 27. You know, this is a stretch run. So what's the team you're most interested in down the stretch? I'm going to start us off with the Columbus Crew to play on your Diego Rossi selection. Have a DP swap here. Julian Gressel in it, right wing back. Rudy Camacho, I thought, was a really under-the-radar move for the Crew, who've been just, like, struggling with center back depth all year long. And Camacho may not be the best defender in the league from that position, but he's one of the best passers, and he knows inside and out what Wilfred Nancy wants. So I thought that was very smart. This is the question for me of, like, Nancy's system. It's taken over clearly. Zellerion was the star, was the incumbent. He moves off, and now it all goes toward how Nancy wants to play. Move the ball quickly, possession-based, rotate it around, those runs at the back post. Rossi should fill in very nicely in that sense. We have some mail here. Huh?
Where?
Huh, where?
Where on the field?
Rossi? Yeah. I think on the left, right?
So Rossi's on the
left. Almost the second forward that splits out into the into the channel a lot.
So Ramirez is where? And then Cucho is where?
I think Cucho's actually kind of a number 10 in this situation.
You think
but it'll be two. The two. It'll be Cucho and Rossi nominally underneath Christian Ramirez, but play will run through Cucho more. He'll get on the ball more in playmaker spots while Rossi does Rossi things and just like runs through the lines.
This is a great conversation. Zach Kritz hit us up, said he's debating his friends about Cucho's position. Whether he will be a winger or a striker, but we're saying it's somewhere in between. Either way, those three, and with Zellerion, it was the same sort of, and Matan fitting into that as well. It just sort of, when you have the ball as much as they do in as many dangerous positions as they do, you're able to drop in and rotate and sort of swap positionally, and sometimes Ramirez drops in and plays that guy to be sort of the wall pass off of for Cucho going forward. Sometimes it's Cucho dropping in and driving in a back line. Rossi brings pace, which I don't think that they've had. Was all around on the field in that sense. Same for Matan. So should be very interesting. Reno hits us up. He's an Impact fan. Says he's going to follow Wilfred Nancy forever, though, probably. So he's wondering when some top five leagues come knocking for Wilfred Nancy.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he's managing in Ligue 1 this time next year. I think he's just like a really, really, really good manager.
We don't really see managers getting transferred out like that from MLS, at least as of this point. The only
guys who have a profile from like Patrick Vieira did, Jesse Marsh because of the Red Bull pipeline, that type of thing.
Yeah exactly. Thierry Henry, maybe Wayne Rooney is going to go somewhere. Yeah. Right? It's like that's kind of been the unless you're within those systems. So I do think that would be awesome to see, like as far as like a progression, because there are managers like Jim Curtin, like Wilfred Nancy, like I think Pat Noonan's starting to claim that way into the category of saying these are guys that could get an opportunity or should get an opportunity at some point to try to go abroad. But if you're not within those sort of systems of City Football Group or Red Bull or, you know, some of those relationships, it's very hard to get those opportunities, it seems like.
The other one is there's rumors, connections this week about John Herdman in Toronto. Leaves a national team job open in North America in a country that Wilfred Nancy lived in and helped develop a portion of those players. I don't know that that interests him, but they're going to host the World Cup.
Canada, yeah.
I think we're more likely to see more interleague moves like Wilfred Nancy. More, I think that's probably a more likely sort of like next step than him necessarily being the one to move on and go somewhere else next. But instead saying, oh, somebody else trying to snatch somebody else from other places.
Well, we've talked about it with Robin Fraser for like 5 years.
Yeah. But he doesn't want to leave Colorado.
No.
Yeah. The Herdman Toronto stuff is very real. It's very, very real. It is at the point where it'd be a surprise if it didn't get done.
Interesting. All right, Dave, give me like a 60 seconds rip here on the team you're most interested in down the stretch. We've eaten up most of our time. Okay. So I'm
going to say RSL. They've obviously came into the break hot. They got healthy. They brought in a lot of new pieces. Now 2.5 weeks pretty much of working together as a group, but no Pablo Ruiz. So they've lost a huge element of their team. What can Mascherini put together in that time span in which they have this unprecedented time to rest and sort of work that is able to keep them at the top of the Western Conference or above? It sounds like they just made an addition while we were on the show in Kevon Lambert, who was a starter for Jamaica over the last year or two and for Phoenix Rising. And he was one of those players where he made so much at Phoenix that it didn't seem super likely he was going to move to MLS at any point. That's like a plug and play, I think, addition to make. So this, I think, once again, you clearly see intent from this new ownership group of wanting to win. They have a lot of depth. They have a lot of options. And Chicho Arango is supposed to be at the point of all this, but they've made a bunch of other additions as well. So RSL are fascinating to me, how they continue to progress, where they can finish. And then do we see a situation where they go into a playoffs and flip the script from what we've seen the last 2 years of like be ball dominant, like, open up the game, create chances rather than trying to be the underdog who tries to overachieve.
Doyle, team you're most interested in?
NYCFC, just because they have looked a shadow of themselves since they sold Tate Castellanos last summer. They finally have a new number nine now. I thought Moncef Bakrar looked pretty good in about 150, 160 League's Cup minutes. They also got Maxi Morales back.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty nice.
He came back with a good bit more gray hair. The beard grade.
Himself out of his contract?
I don't
know. Feels like a stressful...
Yeah, I don't know what happened, honestly. I haven't fully...
You know what it's like when you go back to Wichita and everyone wants a piece of the big New York City star? Yeah. You know what it's like.
You get 6-7 months there and you just got to come running back.
NYCFC, I thought, just played the most beautiful soccer in the league, or among the most beautiful teams in the league since 2016. And they kind of lost that this year. Like, you could see them trying to do it, but it's not coming off. But I think getting a 10, getting a 9 gives them two focal points, two reference points in that attack. And Maxi in particular is brilliant the way he moves off the ball and creates new passing combinations for the guys around him. So I'm looking forward to seeing them. I think they get over the line into the playoffs.
Shout out to the outfield. They wrote a nice piece about one of the random players that they brought in that I requested a few weeks ago. Thank you.
Yeah, great coverage from them. Always enjoy it. Kalen.
I'm going to go with Minnesota United. I lament that I didn't go after my guy.
I hope Bongi scores 37 goals.
Bongi's not among the members of your personal A team. I just want you to
I feel bad.
Grapple with that.
I feel bad.
I can't wait till I see Bongi next and tell him.
I think they're one of the more intriguing teams, especially when you think of this Western Conference and this back stretch. It's all jammed up. It's probably the best way.
It's kind of crazy. They're below the line right now.
Yeah, they're below the line. I think between 5th and 9th, there's 3 points right now. So it's kind of like, take your pick. But I would make a pretty good bet that this Minnesota team, especially the way we saw in Leagues Cup, I was very impressed. I got to see them in person against Toluca. That is not an easy feat. They also, who else did they beat? They took down a couple teams throughout their way. Reynoso was feeling
They crushed Pueblo.
Yeah, they crushed Puebla.
They lost to Chicago, but they were up 2-0, I believe, in that game.
Yeah. They fell flat on their face against Nashville, but they got an early red card. And they got a red card against Toluca,
too.
They beat Columbus, our other team to watch. Uh-huh. Some impressive stuff from them. So if they got to get Pookie playing?
Oh, over under on goals for him rest of the way.
I'm feeling not great. He looked like totally out of sorts in Leagues Cup. He just did not look confident at all in plays where you would expect him, especially watching him play abroad. Just he scored that first goal against Houston with that perfect pass in behind from Reynoso. Wonderful turn, takes it early, so confident. I was like, oh, he's off to the races. And then it's been like, oh, it's actually not that. And Bongi has been the one who's been, you know, their star. But I would bet, you know, I think this team is definitely a playoff team, but I think a team that can continue to rise towards that top half of the Western Conference and those top four seeds and try to get a home playoff game for those Minnesota United supporters.
All right, win with this one. Sunday is when MLS is back. Saturday is the final, obviously, for Leagues Cup in the third place game. Game to watch. Just give it to me quick. Hell is Real is where you're starting us, Doyle.
Yeah. Cincinnati, Supporter Shield leaders all year long, have not looked great the past couple of months. Maybe a little time off after a relatively early elimination.
The home form was a surprise in Leagues Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they looked vulnerable. So maybe getting some rest, getting Puenza and Vasquez and Acosta on the same page a little bit, I think that'll help them. But they're going up against the Columbus Crew team that plays beautiful soccer. I can't wait to watch this game.
This series has been El Tráfico light of like they've all been wild, even the first year when they were both underwhelming teams.
Yeah. And the two best names of rivalries in the league, Hell is Real and El Tráfico.
I think Hell is Real right now is number two, like just behind El Tráfico in rivalry rankings.
Yeah.
I like El Clásico del Sol, but that's just
you. Okay. What are you looking forward to?
Classic fashion. I'm gonna go Vancouver versus San Jose.
Nice.
In Vancouver.
Is that a rivalry? Or?
Richie Larea, baby. He's back.
Yeah, historic rivalry.
Yeah. And then San Marcube, which these were unique moves in investing so much in the positions they play. We did a preview of this one on MLS Season Pass. You can go watch. I think Doyle made the right point, which is Arakube's played as a left center back in a back three with Canada. He has given them a ton of versatility in which just in the run of play, Alfonso Davies can go inside and they can shift into a back four. Arakube can cover ground. He can pass. He's extremely physical for a player who grew up as a fullback that he can win a ton of battles centrally. So I think he gives them a whole different element, and Richie a different style than Julian Gressel, but Julian Gressel clearly not there for the long term. Richie, I think, will be. And so now it's like, okay, how can you build around knowing what you're going to get out of that right wing? Can you get service to Brian White? It feels like a perfect setup for Ryan Gaul to make late runs on pullbacks from Richie Larea. It just, Vancouver's never going to spend the most money to have the most talent on the field. It feels like they have done so in a way in which they will have advantages in unique spaces that they can then put together. And BC plays a vibe when they're on a roll. I think you saw it at times in Leagues Cup. And I thought they actually had a good tournament overall. And so I'm excited to see them go back out there. And for San Jose, they were one of the bright spots to start the year. It has fallen off. I put a lot of that to depth of just like the energy it takes, and it's the same 11 or 12 guys every game. They've added a little bit with Matthew Hoppe coming in and Ayo Akinola, so maybe that can bring some support, but it would be nice to see them finish the season in a way in which they felt like they were moving in the right direction, because I think they should, but you need that proof at times to sort of maybe open up the opportunity for next year of like, okay, you trust us. Now we can go get the big DP to match. You mentioned, I think, Cucho Hernandez or Nico Ladero style signings of like, why not San Jose, right? Yeah. Big market. It's a new, you know, their own stadium that they own, and feels like, well, Matias Almeida went wrong and it all went sideways for a couple of years. If you're on the right path, is there enough trust there to sort of move yourself into a higher echelon of MLS?
That rivalry with Monterrey too.
All right.
Chicago, Orlando, I'm going to be at this one. Both teams are coming in good form. Chicago lost to Club America. Not a lot to be, you know, shameful about in that one. Orlando against Miami, which they made fun and combative. And, I think both teams will carry some of that over into this one. And then the other story for me is Kai Kamara. Of course, just one goal off Landon Donovan at this point on the all-time list. So I'm excited to be there in person. And shout out to Section 8. If you see me there, I'd love to say what's up.
What would be the most fitting team for him to score that goal against? Like, is there a team?
I kind of think the Galaxy, actually, the next week. It's in L.A.
That would be it, yeah.
In L.A., going to Home Depot or whatever. That's the way I knew it. Dignity Health Sports Park now. Thank you, Anders. And he actually worked there at the stadium as well. He went to Cal State North Dominguez Hills, which is right, literally, like, they play on campus at. And Siggy Schmidt was, rest in peace, was his first manager that drafted him to Columbus at the time, but scouted him when Kai and I both were playing for Orange County Blue Stars with Sasha Kleshton and all that crew that I always give a shout out to in Orange County, and we got to go train with the Galaxy then.
You know what's sick? I looked at the schedule here.
Yeah.
If he scores against, so third game's Vancouver, former team.
They're all former
Fifth
teams.
Fifth game's Montreal, former team. Columbus. Then it's Columbus, former team. New England, former team. Red Bulls, Miami, no. Charlotte, no. NYC, no. But he has four former teams in there he could score.
That's why I was looking to see if they played at SKC.
Exactly, same.
And then it's like, oh, well.
But at Montreal, he just, like, they just pushed him out last year. Yeah. So that would be extra fitting for him as well. I mean, it's.
But the LA one would be really cool.
Yeah, that's the best one. Okay, for me, it's Sounders, Atlanta United. Both coasts, both teams that looked poor in the League's Cup, both teams with big potential who haven't yet really realized it this year. Sounders feels like they're a little down.
This
little
is the end of the road for the Sounders. It feels like Ladero's gone. It feels like Rui Diaz is gone. Yeah. It feels like,
what can you make out of this season? Can you put one more magic run together with this group? And then Atlanta United, it might be the same thing with Almada.
Yep.
Certainly not firing on all cylinders. They got some new signings due to the Five Stripes coming in. We finish with the one miss we had on the biggest hip-hop moment in MLS history.
Two misses.
Well, the biggest one is This Is How I Work, This Is How I Play, Steve Zakawani.
Shout out.
Oh, the pre-roll on MLS
on
videos.
Every video we had.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, you weren't around in like 2012 and 2014.
I'm going to miss this Leagues Cup track. Tiki Taka Toka.
Yeah,
I mean, that has been a banger.
A little earworm for you.
Yeah. I'm gonna be. Sad.
What's the other one we missed?
Kanye.
Oh, Kanye. Yeah, like
Kanye
United,
was living in Mercedes-Benz Stadium while he was. It was Donda his recording. I want to say, and he came out
in a stocking cap.
In a stocking cap, like the Phantom of the Opera, like during an Atlanta United game.
Just a good bit.
Yeah, it felt like that should have been Leagues Cup. I know it wasn't, but it felt like it should have been.
It should have been. And on that note, spiritually, we invite you to enjoy the final on Saturday. Sunday, of course, MLS back. Full coverage, Apple TV MLS Season Pass. We'll see you Monday. Adios.